Hello, this is the Angry GM, and this is just a little note before we start with the live chat recording proper to let you know that last night when I was recording this, which is June 22nd, 2022 at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Daylight Correct time, a terrible thing happened. Actually, it happened about an hour and 10 minutes into this overly long live chat because we did go a little bit over time, and we were going to go even more over time, except for the fact that my computer suddenly and tragically suffered a horrible blue screen of death, thus ending the live chat. The computer was okay, and I was able to recover most of the audio, about an hour and 10 minutes, and that is what is going to follow this intro. So without further ado, here is the Angry GM's Mostly Monthly live chat for the month of June 2022. Hello, this is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's Mostly Monthly live, one of these days I'm going to get it in one. The Angry GM's Mostly Monthly live chat for the month of June in the year of 2022. And I'm being told by Stu, good morning from Straya, which I don't know where Straya is or... I don't even know what accent I just put on Straya, but whatever. Yeah. Hello, wherever you are. Straya is an action-based first-person shooter set in Australia around the 1960s with a focus on surviving the many dangerous animals that inhabit the land, air, and water. The player can perform jobs, hunt, collect, and roam freely in an open world. So, hello to you in Straya, the first-person shooter survival game, which I assume is where you are. So I am now picturing you with headphones on, listening to me while you are punching trees for wood so you can build a house. And then you can hide from the terrible funnel web spiders that only come out at night or during the daytime or any time in between. So with that, watch out for the drop bears. Every once in a while, if you punch a tree, there is a chance a drop bear will spawn and kill you. From above. Anyway, I was asked during the 3-minute pre-show that people who showed up early got to enjoy, which wasn't recorded, what music am I listening to? Because I connected to Discord while I still had music playing in the background, and I just wanted to plug this because it is a good album. I enjoy it a lot. So Overclocked Remix is a community for video game music arrangers and remixers, which is a really good site for finding, obviously, remixed and arranged video game music. And there was an album that was put together by several different contributors that I love. And I just happen to have it on because it always puts me in kind of a good mood, which I know is the opposite of the angry thing, but here we are. And that is, the album is called Rise of the Star. It is a collection of remixed music by a bunch of different contributors, all from the, 1993? I think 93. 1993 HAL Laboratories game, Kirby's Adventure for the original NES. It was one of the last games to come out on the original NES. It was a really, really well-polished and amazing platformer. One of my favorite games. And it had to be around 93 or 94. I should look it up. But anyway, I have linked to the album in the live chat. And you know what? What I'm going to start now is doing something a little different. And I'm going to start a little text file here where I'm going to just grab that link and put it in the text file. And there, then I will be able to post it. And Nitsu is sharing a fun fact that Kirby the character was based off of a corporate lawyer who won some big deal lawsuit for Nintendo. He was actually, he was named for that lawyer. And I'm trying to remember what the lawsuit was. There was a lawsuit between Nintendo and Universal Pictures because Universal Pictures claimed that Donkey Kong infringed on their right, infringed on their use of, holy crap. Donkey Kong infringed on King Kong. It infringed on the trademark. And ultimately, the suit was decided, I believe, on a technicality because due to some mishap where Universal Studios actually was found to have stolen a bit of copyright or trademark or whatever, Universal Studios didn't actually technically have a claim on Donkey Kong or something like that. I don't remember the whole story, but now, Nitsua is linking a Wikipedia article to John Kirby, which mentions this specific lawsuit, which proves that, once again, I am just a genius when it comes to video gaming history, which is absolutely fantastic. I still can't remember any members of my family's birthday, but I can remember obscure facts of Nintendo copyright law. So that's good. Anyway, the point is, I recommend Kirby's Adventure, Rise of the Star. I also recommend, if you are listening to the live chat live and you didn't see the pinned comment, that you go ahead and look at the pinned comment so that you can participate in the monthly live, or the mostly monthly live chat bingo game that Nitsua put together, for which I think now he's offering a prize, which means he's nicer to my fans than I am. And so you can go download a bingo card and listen to the live chat. And every time one of the live chat or one of the bingo squares is satisfied by me just doing my thing, you check it off. And when someone gets a bingo, they can yell bingo. And then huzzah, they get a copy of the book, a book of their choice from Appendix N or from D&D 5e's PHB Appendix E for the young whippersnappers. So contact Nitsua for more information on that, or if you win, or if you have any suggestions for quirks and foibles of Angry that would make for good bingo squares. Okay, having covered all of that, I can now get started. All of that was prelude to the news and updates portion of the show, which is going to be a little long tonight. So we've got a lot to discuss. It was observed for, well, okay, actually, first of all, let me jump in with this in case anybody missed the memo. The Angry GM is now supportable on an alternate crowdfunding platform called Subscribestar. Okay, there are many, many people who asked me to provide an alternative to Patreon, and there are more than a few people who stopped supporting me because they had one issue or another with Patreon. And Angry is not unsympathetic. Plus, Angry wants money. So Angry set up the alternate platform Subscribestar. I am now available on both Patreon and Subscribestar. There's some little differences in how you have to organize things like reward tiers and all that shit on both platforms. And there's a few different rules on each platform. But apart from those little foibles, whatever, you will get the same deal on both Subscribestar and Patreon now and forever. Okay, Subscribestar does not let me support on a per creation basis. So the Subscribestar tiers are based on four times the amount of those that are on Patreon, since I publish four articles a month. And it's been a long time since I've missed an article. If I ever do miss an article, Subscribestar supporters will get a refund in the amount of the missed article so that they don't pay for an article they don't get. Because I still believe very firmly in only getting paid for work I actually do. If anybody has been thinking of making the change, please, by all means, move over to Subscribestar, only because Subscribestar limits the features you have access to until you have certain numbers of followers. And so if there's anybody who has been frustrated with Patreon and wants an alternative, I'm not asking people to move if you weren't going to move. But if you have been waiting for the opportunity to go to a different crowdfunding platform, now's the time. It would help me out a little bit. That said, Thanks to the 8 supporters I have now on Subscribestar, I at least have hit a minimum level of being able to automatically bill and request payouts, which was the most important thing. So thank you to those early supporters. Yeah, so that's that. Pursuant to that, you may have noticed some changes in my workflow, in that early access articles are not, as of this week or last week, I can't remember whether it's this week or last week, are no longer being posted on Patreon in full or on Subscribestar, but rather you are getting a link to a secret subscribers-only supporters-only portion of my website as new articles come out. This is because now that I have articles on my website and 2 different crowdfunding platforms, and each one of those has a different editor and markup language, it was a beast to try and post an article on all 3 of them. You will also notice that comments have been re-enabled on the Angry GM website, and I didn't realize they were turned off, actually. That was kind of an oversight. So if you want to comment on my posts, throw the comments onto the Angry Games thing. Don't comment on Patreon or Subscribestar if you can avoid it, because those comments, when the article goes live, go live with the article to the rest of the world. And my interactions with comments and stuff have been divided among different platforms and also the Angry Article forum here, or Angry Article, channel here in the server. And it's hard to keep track of everything everyone's saying, and I really do value the feedback, you know, and not just the compliments. My ego loves the compliments, but I love to see what's being understood, what's not being understood, and when I seem to have hit on something important, that definitely warrants further attention. So it helps if those comments are all in one place. If you have a comment rather than a discussion where you just want to say something about the article, and you'd like me to see it, you are actually better off putting that in the comment section than discussing it here in the Angry Article discussion, because sometimes I go for days without really reading things. I pop in twice a day to skim everything for a moderation check at the very least, but I don't always have time to participate in all the discussions going on in the very active Discord, which I am very grateful for, by the way. I love the fact that you're all so active and you're constantly discussing things. It's really a great boon, and you make this community a fantastic place. And it also means I don't have to check in constantly to just keep the conversations going. Plus, you're all fantastic and a lot more interesting than I am in a lot of ways. I get my 5,000 words of say every week. And you know, the discussion that grows out of that is fascinating. Even if I then turn around and make fun of it in the long rambling introduction to next week's article, I still do love it and I find it gratifying. So thank you very much for that. There have also been some changes to the content schedule, and somebody mentioned that it feels like there has been a deluge of content, and a couple of other people have lost track of what has actually come out and when. And so part of this is because I was changing over to Subscribestar and then changing the workflow over to accommodate just posting in one place. I am now doing 4 feature articles a month, like I have always done. I try to put out a content schedule at the beginning of each month and an announcement. Do my best to actually deliver the articles that I promise unless something changes. Those get posted on Wednesday mornings. It won't be 5 a.m. anymore. It's now going to be when I get into the office, because now there are some switches I now have to manually flip. I can't automate some stuff. But so every Wednesday, unless there's 5 Wednesdays in the month, as you know, when I take a Wednesday off in that case, but every Wednesday you will find a new early access article posted. It's on the Angry GM in the super secret subscriber section. Announcements will be sent out on Patreon, on Subscribestar, in the news and announcements channel of the Angry Discord, and also in the Angry article discussion of the Angry Discord. Okay, so that's four different places you can find out that a new article has gone into early access for your perusing pleasure. Okay, proofread alouds are currently being embedded in the articles. So when the article gets posted on theangrygm.com and you get the link, you can follow the link and you can find the proofread aloud, and you can either listen to it in the embedded player on the website, or you can download the MP3 file from there. I am bringing online a new RSS feed that is one RSS feed that I can, you know, feed everybody, the subscribe stars, the Patreons, the everybody's. Okay. That's going to be like a week or two before I can get that online. So right now everything's just being embedded. I'm going to try and backfill and put all the article, the audio files for at the very least, you know, at least in the last month. And then I'm going to gradually move the rest up so that the entire last year is available for as sort of a podcast. Yeah, Stu is asking, has there ever been three Wednesdays in a month? Every month has three Wednesdays. So anywho, the proofread alouds are in there. Then the following Wednesday, that article will get turned into a public access article. The link will change to, a non-super secret patrons only link. And then a new early access article will come out for all of you people. In addition, I have been recording the proofread alouds and letting people listen live here in the live chat channel. And I generally do them Wednesdays, Thursdays, or Fridays in the afternoon Central Daylight Time. I can't plan them that far in advance because it depends very heavily on when I manage to finish the article and have time to record it. But people get to listen in on those, and I generally slot an hour of time to do it, and it usually takes 45 minutes to read an article. So therefore, that generally leaves 15 minutes of Q&A for the people who participate. Finally, I am now putting out a weekly column every Tuesday. This is not going into early access. This is just getting pushed to everybody all at once. And it is alternating, though I don't know if it's going to religiously alternate. Religiously is not the right word. I don't know if it's strictly going to alternate or if I'm just going to do one or the other as I have topics to cover. But some weeks I'm going to share a shit I don't hate, which is where I call attention to something that I think some of you might be interested in, be it a book, a video game, a Kickstarter project, a piece of GMing software, whatever. Okay. And then I just give basically a 1,000-word stream of consciousness review of the thing, sometimes two. The weeks I don't do shit I don't hate, I am going to do an Ask Angry. Ask Angry is going back to being a standalone column where I will answer one question when I do it. And those will generally be about 2,000 words long. They will always come out on Tuesday. They come out for everybody all at once. No early access. It's just too much for me to manage. So that's the current content schedule and workflow. And I hope that all is now clear as crystal. Well, I hope it's clear to somebody because I sure as hell can't keep track of it. I lost track of what article. Somehow it was pointed out today and I went back and looked and discovered I had made a little whoopsie doodle, as it's called, because I flipped the release of two articles. So there are two articles that when they went into early access, I released one too early. I can't remember which article was which. I released the articles out of order to the public and confused the hell out of absolutely everybody. So, sorry about that. Everything is now flowing smoothly. It's like butter now, at least for this week. Nitsua is asking, what was that word? The word is whoopsie doodle. What's that reference from? Go ahead. Like, that's a reference. It's from somewhere. No, it is not a word I made up. It is a word someone made up, but it is not me. I'll give you a hint. It's a sitcom. No, not Ned Flanders. It does sound like a Ned Flanders. It is not a Ned Flanders. Anywho, moving on. Or any way, yeah, Firefly. Then it would have been like, meow. Not Firefly. Anyhow, whoopsie doodle. Okay, that is a Ned Flanders thing, but that's not where I got it from, okay? Fine, 30 Rock. Look it up. 30 Rock. You ruined the game. I mean, yes, Ned Flanders did use it. You clearly showed me what is absolutely not a doctored meme that you could easily have just added the caption to Cycloptic Squirrel there. So I do not trust that at all. Anywho. All right, moving on. Don't you technically me. I know where I got it from. May not have been the only person who ever said it, but I know where I got it from. So, other news. Let's talk Tension Dice Kickstarter. Because a lot of you thought I had totally forgotten about that project, didn't you? Or maybe a lot of you thought I totally had forgotten about that project. But suddenly earlier this week, I sent out an email to my mailing list and said, guess what? The project's not dead, neither am I. Yeah, the Tension Dice Kickstarter is still a thing. It got put on hold because, first of all, there's all that other crap I just discussed. Like, I decided to revamp and change my entire workflow. And I'm not even mentioning, like, I did sort of a stealth reorganization of my entire website in order to facilitate this crap. I went through and reorganized all the series and everything else on the website, made sure everything was posted properly, killed some old series and tags and things, and just did that. Cleaned up some old add-ons that weren't doing what they were doing, and discovered there was actually a couple of problems on my website, which still need to be fixed. So I'm now doing a bunch of website work in the background. But I didn't even talk about that. But anyway, Tension Dice Kickstarter. Still coming, still technically this summer. Still being worked on. It is likely going to launch in late August, possibly early September. So, when a firm date is firmed up and the date is no longer up in stone, I will let everybody know through that mailing list. And if you don't know what I am talking about, just go to angry.games/tensiondice. And that didn't come up as a link for some reason when I posted it in the whoop, and then I clicked. Oh, this is a disaster. Everything's falling apart. Oh, because I didn't include the HTTPS. This card doesn't recognize it. But anyway, there you go. Go to there. And check that out, and then you'll get emails and stuff. So, speaking of things that aren't dead and haven't been forgotten about, let's talk about the Angry Non-Convention for the fall. As promised, that has been worked on in the background, and I am greatly, what's the word for when someone did something and it makes you happy and you want them to know that it has made you happy? Grateful. I am grateful. The word is grateful. I am deeply grateful to Devitt. Dude, I'm a professional writer and a GM. What's the word for when something makes you happy and you want to tell the person that they made you happy? Yeah, you should be concerned with how long it took for you to come up with that word. Proselis says, that's a great sign. Angry forgot about happiness. Okay. Yeah, right? It does. It sounds like something the brain slug would be getting me to say. What is that word that we humans have when we are trying to tell people they have made us that feeling? I don't know. And I don't know why it was Mayor Diamond Joe Quimby who was infected by the brain slug. But anyway, I am maintaining my laser-like focus on the topic at hand. It's a good thing I have this bulleted list. So, the Angry Non-Convention is still a thing that is still being worked on, and I am greatly grateful to Debit the community member, for taking point and help doing, I want to say helping me organize it, but honestly, he's been my right-hand man in this, even though he is my left-hand man because he is debit. If he were my right-hand man, he'd be credit, you know, which is a joke only he and I get because all the rest of you are computer programmers. Anywho, so he's been organizing it. We're getting some quotes. We're trying to get some dates. Tentatively, we're trying to target the weekend of October 8th. So, or the weekend starting October 7th, I guess Friday, the October 7th. Again, I'm not going to say too much about it except to say the project's not dead. And it is still going forward, and we still have the list of people who are interested, and we're keeping to it. But I'll probably have more to say about it in an announcement in just a couple of weeks, depending on how things are moving forward. Of course, by then, none of us will be able to afford to drive to Ohio, and I will not make a political comment about that. I will just comment on the state of the world. It is such that it is. So, anywho. So that's the Angry Non-Convention. And finally, the Game Angry, the republication of Game Angry by an actual legitimate real-life publisher, probably dead. Moving on. All right. So, yeah. So here's the thing. As I announced last month, Ohio is that by choice. Yes, it was agreed upon as being sort of a geographical neutral point. So Ohio is actually fairly easy to get to for many people east of the Mississippi, which includes me. Yeah, that's it. Nit, of all the people who indicated a strong interest in doing such a thing, it was the centraliest. Okay, so that's why. Me, personally, I'd love to have it up here in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Then it's easy. I can sleep in my own bed. Plus, it's a hell of a lot cheaper than Ohio. But I won't make any of you come up here. Anywho. So back to the book contract, because last month I think I let everybody know that I was in talks with a publisher who wanted to republish Game Angry, a revised and expanded and updated edition with 5 new chapters, and I did a bunch of work, and we were, hey, Direware Teddy, Wisconsin is the best 7 months of the year, winter is the best 7 months out of the year in Wisconsin, and boy, I just killed that. Anywho. Yeah, so after months of going back and forth, literally months, because I looked back at the initial meeting I had with this publisher was April 17th. And finally, I got a contract, and on reviewing the contract, there are some terms that I cannot abide. And while I am open to discussing the issue with them and seeing if we can go forward with changing the terms, or at least I was, I actually think I might have a better plan than even working with them. And so I am going to just think out loud here, okay? And I'm just going to see if I can get a sense of the chat, to see if what I'm thinking is the sort of thing that might actually sound like a good plan to anybody. Okay. So, here's the thing. I have been writing a lot of content lately that has to do with adventure writing and adventure building. And it occurs to me that a compilation of all of that stuff... Nitsua just said, holy shit, yes. It's like, I didn't even finish the question. You don't know what you're agreeing to. Like, maybe this is a non sequitur that has nothing to do with any of this. Shut up and take my money. You are like the best and the worst focus group, just so you all know. Okay? All right. No, seriously, your excitement is gratifying, but listen. Okay. It occurs to me that a sequel to Game Angry, like Build Angry or Campaign Angry, might be an excellent follow-up. Right? Okay. So, I know, stop a second. Everybody calm down. Because there's a thing, there's a problem, there's an issue. Okay? Here is the problem. Game Angry, the original, is a book I cannot sell anymore, or I cannot sell at all. I couldn't get it in stores. I couldn't sell it on Amazon. Technically, because the publisher doesn't even exist, I don't own it. And the thing is, because of all of that crap, while it was a runaway success on Kickstarter, from a standpoint of exposing me to the wider world and drawing an audience in, it completely friggin' failed. Okay. Not that I'm begrudging the fact that it was a runaway success. I am very, very happy with the success, but part of that whole thing was contingent on I was working with a publisher who was going to have a distribution deal, so this book would be in stores. And I'm not going to go into all the distribution crap, but what I'm going to say is it desperately needs a complete reprint. But I don't want to ask my fans who funded this book to fund me to just do it again. Okay, that's bullshit, and I would never ever do that. I would feel ashamed of myself if I did. But what I could do is build the cost of a new print run and revision of that into a Kickstarter for the sequel and launch the sequel Kickstarter, but also offer a, you know, package thing where you can get the new edition of Game Angry and the Kickstarter and the sequel at a discount. It would allow me to have the capital to republish Game Angry under my own label without charging you any more for it, without making you pay for it. But from an accounting perspective, it would allow me to find a way to finance the project and capitalize on it. And then also republish with a beautiful new professional layout and maps the module Fall of Silver Pine Watch to go along with it. And this I could do on my own. Okay. Okay, Nitsua, I'm glossing over. Someday it would be interesting to hear the Byzantine catacombs of U.S. copyright law that led you to not owning the book you wrote and kickstarted. I own it. I own the copyright to it. I'm allowed to sell it. When I say I don't own it, I am glossing over a technicality. Okay? But it was a devastating technicality on top of another technicality on top of my publisher being my publisher failing to deliver on the distribution deal that led to me ordering twice as many copies as I was ever going to sell in my life. But here's the thing. With two books and the Tension Dice now published by Angry Games, I am then eligible to seek my own distribution deal where I can get my products in stores and thus have distribution intact for when Smafarge comes out. Okay. October Foundry is asking about this. Do you plan to include the chapters you were going to when in talks with the publisher? Yes. I'm going to rewrite the book. I'm going to revise it, update it, include, basically write the book I was going to give to the publisher, but just publish it myself instead, and piggyback it on the Kickstarter for the sequel book, because I can build that cost in fairly cheap. Okay. I'm not saying necessarily the Fall of Silver Pine watch is going to see physical printing. Okay, Nitsua mentioned that. I do not think that is something that is going to be in the cards. Okay, that is not something I could do cost effectively. I will look at it. I will examine it and see if from a cost accounting standpoint I can make it all work. But the key to this plan is that I am basically what I'm doing is I'm taking the profit that I would make on a sequel Kickstarter and plowing that into financing the republication of the original, which already cuts into what's left over from that project to finance future projects. Okay? Because the thing is, like, I know people do this. Okay? I know people don't put any of their own money into a project. They have an idea, they throw it on Kickstarter, they hope they get enough, and that's when they start. But the proper way to build a Kickstarter project is that you do as much as you can on your own dime first, and then go to the funding to finish to put the product into production. Okay? So, like, even just putting together the website, getting graphics, and, you know, getting a proof and an edit on the original product, on the first manuscript or on any previews or whatever, plus any other, like, you know, prototyping and other things, depending on what you're doing, all that shit costs money. Okay. And you have to have some money to throw into a Kickstarter project before you can even throw it on Kickstarter. And the less of that you do in advance, the more risky the project is, the less likely it is that you're actually going to succeed. Runaway costs are going to surprise you, and then you're going to run away with everybody's money. Or things are going to fall apart. Calidrive is asking, is this one of those, the best way to make a large fortune kind of things? No, this is not. What this actually is it takes money to make money. Okay? At the end of the day, Kickstarter is just another form of financing a project. In order to finance a project, you have to be, like, let's say you want to make dice and sell dice, right? You have to make the dice before you can sell them. Okay? Which means you have to put the money in to buy the big pile of dice before you can sell them to anybody. Okay? And if they're custom dice, then you have to put more money in to just design the dice. And if there's an instruction manual to go with the dice because there's a dice game, you have to write the thing or pay someone to write it. You have to pay someone to edit it. You have to pay someone to do the layout. You have to pay someone to do the box design. All of this shit. Before you can sell a product, you have to make a product. And making a product costs money. And what companies do, like, everybody sees corporations as like these dragons where it's like, oh, they just hoard all their money and they pile it up. Most of a corporation's profits, by law, even tiny little corporations like me, must get plowed back into financing future projects. Okay? You don't just take the profits out of the company and run away with them. Okay? I don't make all the money that Angry Games makes. That money's got to be piled up so that the next time I want to launch a Kickstarter, or if I needed to, I can't go back to Kickstarter if I need a second printing. If I run out of inventory on my books, I need to be able to buy another print run if I want to sell more books. I can't go back to Kickstarter every time I want to reprint the same book. So you need money to make money. Okay. The companies that don't understand that are the companies that live Kickstarter to Kickstarter. And as soon as their first Kickstarter goes bad, they're gone. They're out of business. Okay. Generally speaking, when a corporation has a project to fund, if they don't have the money on hand, then one of two options happens. They borrow the money either from a bank or by floating bonds and selling them to investors, or they issue stock, which they sell to investors. The money comes in from selling the stock or floating the bond or borrowing the money, and then they use that money to finance the project. That's finance. Kickstarter is just another alternative to floating stock or to issuing stock or floating bonds or whatever it is. It's just another way that a company can make money in it to finance a project. There's differences in what the investors get. When you buy stock in a company, what you get is a share of the profit that the company makes on whatever that project was. On Kickstarter, what you get is usually you get the product itself. Okay, it's essentially pre-ordering. Often you'll get it at a discount, and often you'll get other stuff alongside that. Many Kickstarters give you the chance to have a voice in it. Plus, a lot of people fund Kickstarters just because they're projects that they genuinely want to happen that won't happen any other way. Because if I walked into a bank right now and said, hey, I'd like, okay, that's a bad example, but you know, if like John Q, somebody walked into a bank today and said, I want to publish a role-playing game book. Will you lend me, $20,000 so that I can do a 1500 unit print run? Again, banks might do that depending on their history, but usually they can't do that. So Kickstarter. Anywho, I didn't mean to go into all of that, but it's kind of important for people to understand this. And I want anybody who's going to fund my stuff or help support me to understand exactly what you're doing. You're financing these projects. You're making them happen. The return is that the project happens and you get the rewards. Plus you get a say in it. Plus you get membership in the community. Plus everything else. Okay. They're intangible benefits. It's not the same as getting interest on a bond or getting dividends or capital gains on stocks, but it is the same thing. Anywho, October Foundry asked, doing this cuts into my profits. What benefits does revising and publishing a new edition of Game Angry bring you? The big thing, okay, I didn't want to get into the weeds, and at this point, I'm going to dismiss the producer because there's topics that I want to get into tonight. But there is a lot of news to cover. So, Procellus, you are off duty. I am, because I know you said you might have a limited time frame tonight to act as my producer, and I'm going to give myself an extra 30 minutes to make sure that I get in Q&A time. But I'm going to answer these questions because I'm trying to evaluate whether this project is actually going to be worth it. Here's the deal, okay? Generally speaking, if you make a project, let's say you write a book, okay, self-published, okay, you can't just get that in stores, okay? There's two ways you can get a book that you published into stores. One is you can call every individual store you want to carry your book and say, I wrote a book, do you want to buy some copies? Or two, you work with what's called a distributor. A distributor sells books, basically buys books from publishers and sells them to stores, acts as sort of an intermediary, a go-between, you know. And the advantage of working with a distributor is instead of you having to call every store in the country that you think might want to have your book, they already have relationships with distributors, and the distributor can say, okay, we've got 10 new authors this month, and here's, you know, 10 new books that they've published. Which ones do you want? Okay, now, distributors, it is not worth it for them to work with an author or publisher if all they have is one book. Okay, there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of it has to do with reliability and a history, but also it has to do with how buyers in bookstores and game stores interact with distributors and stuff like that. So generally speaking, if you want to publish something, you have to have a list. And usually it's three items, okay? So you have to have some distributors are different. It depends on the size of the distributor. The ones that I have talked to in role-playing games, they want three products. You have to have three products that you can say, here, I have these three products you can put in stores. Then they'll talk to you and they'll buy a test amount of inventory of each of those three items and see if stores want it and see if it'll sell. Okay? This is the big obstacle to getting a product in physical stores, is that you have to have some number of products before a distributor will talk to you, or you have to do all your own legwork. Okay. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about the original publication of the book and how there was a distribution deal on the table that got scuttled because of issues with the publisher that I was working with. None of that matters. The point is, until I have three published items, I can't get any of my products in stores. So it is worth it for me to republish Game Angry as the publisher. Because right now, the listed publisher on Game Angry is Third Act Publishing, a company that no longer exists. Okay? Which means that, you know, I'm not the publisher of record. And this is all legal mumbo-jumbo technicality, I know. So what I need to do is republish it just so that it's published by Angry Games. So that when I have two more products, I can give a call to hypothetically Alliance and say, hey, remember when you were interested in the Angry GM stuff a couple of years ago? Well, now I have three stuffs. Do you want them? And they'll say, yes, we'll take 1,000 of each thing, hopefully. And then I will say, okay, here is 1,000 of each thing. And then they will start trying to get it in game stores and stores and stuff. Which means later, when I publish the big box, the Smaffarge, I just call Alliance and say, hey, guess what? I have a big box role-playing game coming out. It's going to be big. The Kickstarter funded to this many. I had this many people look at it. And they're like, great, get us X thousand copies. And we'll try and get it in stores. Okay? That's the biggest advantage to me republishing Game Angry. And why it is worth it for me to do it. I can't do it at a loss. I can't afford to do it at a loss. But if I can piggyback it on another project so that the profits from one project can fund both and do it all in one go, and the Tension Dice Kickstarter is a success, then all of a sudden I have three products. Okay, this is the biggest advantage. There's a few other ones. The other big one is if people can find Game Angry in stores and just stumble on it, like in Barnes & Noble or, you know, your local Gnome Games or wherever you go to get your games or Noble Knight Games, they suddenly, what's this? And then they flip it over, they look at the back, it's like, oh, this looks fun. Or some game shop guy recommends it and says, hey, you should buy this for your kids if they're interested in role-playing games. And then all of a sudden, I have people who know my name coming to my website. So, if I can get Game Angry in stores that way, then that also increases my consumer base, which means the number of eyes I have on Smaffarge when it becomes a thing. Okay. So that is the entire big, heavy answer. Okay. And why it suddenly occurred to me that it was to my advantage to, when the contract came down from publishing, I looked at it, and although it would have been a really nice injection of cash because they were offering me a good amount of money to do it, I suddenly realized that in the long run, I could do better for myself if I could structure the project this way. And it seems like from a sense of the room, people would like to see a sequel to Game Angry, which basically adventure and campaign building, the stuff I've been working on. And so there we go. That's what I'm thinking right now. The thing is, before I could put my attention on that, I have to get past the Tension Dice Kickstarter, which means this is probably a winter... This is probably a Q1 2023 project right now. Okay, that's probably when the Kickstarter would launch is in Q1 2023. Because I got to look at the long haul. But in the meanwhile, if that's the plan, I can start writing the manuscript in dribs and drabs now so that when the book does come out, I can get it to the... Or when the Kickstarter goes live, I already have two manuscripts that I can pretty much throw into production very quickly. And get the turnaround time. Plus, despite all of the chaos, and I know I'm going to shoot myself in the foot by saying this, knock wood, publishing a book, actually not that hard. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of stress. But at the end of the day, it is something that I can do fairly quickly now. And I have learned a few things since then. And one of them is, from now on, I work with fulfillment companies on my Kickstarters who have friendly overseas shipping. Okay. Thank you for taking the time to answer. I have another question. You, October Foundry again. You had to wear a lot. I guess we're skipping to the question and answer portion. And I was going to tell you all about how I killed two campaigns in 1 week. But that's a story for another time, I guess. Let's jump to the Q&A portion. If you have cues or questions or comments, post them in the text chat. And I will respond to and answer them. Just please, please remember to use the big red exclamation point emoji for comments and the big red question mark emoji at the end of questions so that I can scroll back and find them. Procellus just got the message that time has been extended a half hour. You're sticking around? Do you have the time? If so, I appreciate it. If not, don't feel it's necessary. I'll broom myself out. I'll get me coat. Okay. I did see October Foundry's question, and I will answer. So thank you for taking the time to answer. I have another question. You had to wear a lot of new hats producing Game Angry and Fall of Silver Pine Watch. Are you comfortable wearing all of those hats for multiple projects? No. But I have also, in the interim, met people who can wear some of those hats for me. Okay. So for example, I don't want to announce it yet because we're still working out the details. I have found a graphic designer who also happens to be a cartographer who is very interested in working with me in the short and medium term on several projects. And extremely competent, extremely experienced, beautiful work. You have seen some of his work, actually. But again, until things are finalized, I'm not going to say too much. So that takes away the graphic design. And he's actually really super duper interested in redesigning Fall of Silver Pine Watch, because while he agrees with my vision that a module must be usable at the table, both in print and electronically. At the same time, because I lacked the layout chops and the graphic design chops, my accomplishment was not quite up to my vision. And he has some really good ideas for how to improve the presentation on that. So we're of a similar mind on that and, you know, similar vision. So I'm happy to work with him. And that's really the biggest thing, is having a good graphic designer. Other than that, I'm not going to lie. I do like having a lot of irons in the fire. I have to do several different things in a day. And, they're like, the thing is, I liked wearing the hats only so that I knew what it felt like to wear them. Okay. Now, although I will never call myself a graphic designer because I didn't, because I obviously didn't master the subject, you know, I didn't get a degree in it or anything. I taught myself very quickly. I know enough about graphic design to talk to a graphic designer and make sure a graphic designer is giving me what I'm asking for. And that's useful. Sometimes, no, it's good to have even just a tiny bit of proficiency in something just so you can communicate with the people doing the job for you. Okay? I now know enough about fulfillment that I know how to negotiate with a fulfillment company. Okay? I don't want to ever do fulfillment again. Not myself. But I now know what I need to know to talk to a fulfillment company, and I understand the issues there. Which also means if someone comes to me and says something that I know is bullshit, I can say, look, you're bullshitting me. Okay. So how did you kill two campaigns in 1 week? Okay. One sort of uncomfortable to talk about. So here it is. Here's the two stories, because I was going to tell these stories anyway. So here we go. First of all, the Angry Open World came campaign TPK'd. Which I suggested it will. It would, right? Like I mentioned in the article on Tarot for Adventure Building Dummies, I mentioned that I was writing an adventure that might never see the light of day because at the time I was planning this next adventure, the party hadn't quite finished the previous adventure and we had stopped in the middle of a scene that had, I was looking at it, I was giving them 60-40 odds. 60-40 odds of pulling it out. 60% chance of pulling it out into a win. 40% chance that a significant portion of the party was going to pay for the victory with their lives. And they paid the ultimate price. They were ultimately ripped apart by Sahuagin. They were ambushed in the night by Sahuagin when they camped. And I have to, in their defense, they had an extremely clever plan. They knew they were in Sahuagin territory, the River Sahuagin, a different kind of Sahuagin. They knew they were in River Sahuagin territory. They knew the Sahuagin would pop out of the river at night and attack them. And they had already fended off decisively one raid on their camp the previous night. So they knew what they were dealing with, and their idea was actually to set up a decoy camp. They set up a campfire. They put blood in the water too, to draw the Sahuagin to this camp. And they set up a campfire and they set it up on a beach below an overhang, and there was plenty of underbrush. They all crept off and hid. The wizard set up a couple of alarm spells so they would have an early warning. And basically the plan was the Sahuagin would rush the camp, discover there was no one there, and then the party would descend upon the Sahuagin and slaughter them all. It was a really good plan. It was really smart, and I'm really proud of my player. This group is really smart. They put together really good plans. They sometimes are too smart for their own good because they often talk themselves out of really good plans. But, you know, that's any group. But they put together a really solid plan. The Sahuagin threw them off, though, because the Sahuagin were more cautious this time around. They had lost a substantial population. And because River Sahuagin in the Angryverse can telepathically communicate with alligators, they sent some alligators up to stir up the camp first. What they were hoping is the alligators would go up to the camp, find some people sleeping, and drag a couple of them into the water and mangle them and drown them. And then the Sahuagin would then jump out of the water following them and, you know, mop up the survivors. The alligators climb out of the water to this empty camp and they start casting around. They've got the telepathic message, there's food up there, and there ain't no food up there. So now they're just kind of snuffling around and looking confused. And the Sahuagin are not showing up, because their alligators are just kind of standing there, not mangling anybody or dragging any corpses into the water or drowning anybody. So the party then got a little nervous and attacked the alligators, giving away their own ambush. Then the Sahuagin, when they come out, they appear from their ambush position and attack the alligators. Then the Sahuagin swarm them. And then it became a very ugly situation, particularly because how they split the party allowed a Sahuagin barbarian to run around the Sahuagin war chief ran around their tanks and got to their squishies. And after that, it was kind of an ugly situation. That said, the party slaughtered the alligators and killed every Sahuagin except the barbarian, before they were finally finished off. as a result of that, the Sahuagin village that was upriver that they were looking for in the first place had now lost so much of its population that I determined that the Sahuagin village would then collapse. Like the remaining Sahuagin, there were a few warriors left because, you know, they'd sent out two war parties now that had not come back. The remaining Sahuagin combatants with their non-combatant, you know, tadpoles and, you know, and elderly and stuff would give up the village and go back upriver to the wilds from which they came to rejoin the larger Sahuagin population and not mess with the river again for years. So the party did beat the Sahuagin. Unfortunately, it cost them their lives. And I did make that clear. That said, I felt really bad about this one. Like, generally speaking, I feel good about a TPK because I won. I felt really bad about this one. This was a tough fight. The party went in with a good plan. And it was an optional objective. It was one they decided they wanted to take on themselves, but to be fair, I knew it was one they would want to take on. Originally, they were just investigating a lost merchant ship and trying to recover some goods, but they decided that, you know, for the good of the world, they had to go eradicate these Sahuagin, which I kind of knew that they would do because there's two churches in the party who believe in protecting others and fighting evil. So I knew the Sahuagin would be a thing, and I knew they'd want to go after them. And they had a good plan, and they really, like, by all rights, they had earned the victory. But for a really, it came down to one tactical oversight. And the thing is, I was not using, like, I didn't adjust the Sahuagin's second raid because I knew the party was doing the decoy camp. Okay, what had happened was, like, I knew the Sahuagin, if their first raid was beaten, they'd launch a more powerful second raid, they'd also be spying on the party, and they'd be sending alligators to harass the party. And earlier, as the party was rowing upriver in rowboats, an alligator did try to capsize their rowboat and get some of them into the water, where the Sahuagin, who will not come out of the water during the daytime, could have killed them. So the alligator thing had also been established. It wasn't like I'm changing the plan to screw over their plan. They had a good plan. I broke a few of my rules, though, in this situation. One of them was I let a session run late. Okay, and the reason I read it, so our session had started late. It had been a bad setup, and we spent most of the session just going up the river. And it was kind of dull. And, you know, we've had a couple of sessions where not a lot has happened. Pacing online is always difficult. And I felt really bad about that. So I'm looking at the time and I'm like, okay, there's a half hour left in the session. And I really don't want to do the Sahuagin ambush. But at the same time, I didn't want to have a session with no action at all. So even though my gut was telling me not to do it, I started the fight in the last half hour of the session. Then it ended up, we were already going late and several players just couldn't handle it. And we're flagging. It's, you know, for them, it's like 11 o'clock at night or midnight. For me, it's 11 o'clock, or I don't remember what the times actually were because I don't know how time and time zones work, but it was late at night for people. And people, I asked, you know, do you guys need to go? And some of them said yes. So I actually took a picture of the battle mat, and you know, I have my master sheet because I keep all my combat control notes on one piece of paper. So I knew everything that was going on, and I could reconstruct the fight and start it in the middle. But I broke a fight in the middle, and I ended a session late, which are things I told everybody never ever do in my session structure article, which, once again, really good at giving advice, not so good at following it. It was against my better judgment because I let emotions get in the way. So anyway, next set, the other thing that happened was, for unrelated reasons, we decided to go back to a virtual tabletop. Okay, and this was another mistake. I wanted to move to a virtual tabletop because using the downward facing camera, the battle mats, the tokens, physical books, all that stuff in the space I had, it was becoming a bit of a beast to manage, and I was realizing it was slowing me down. So I decided we would go to Fantasy Grounds because I love Fantasy Grounds. It is awesome. And I used it to run the Fall of Silver Pine Watch games for the supporters last year. And it was absolutely fantastic when I put in the prep work. And I had since learned that the prep work isn't that much. So I'm like, let's move to Fantasy Grounds. Can we give that a try for 3 weeks? See if that improves pacing and things. And then for whatever stupid reason, I decided to do it right then and there before the start of the session where we would finish the fight. That was another stupid thing. I never should have done that. I should have kept going the way I was going, at least until we got out of this fight or this adventure. But I was really, really tired of the setup and the breakdown and all the extra time and everything else. And technical issues and what have you. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to put everything into Fantasy Grounds over the weekend, program all the characters, set up the entire fight, move my custom Sahuagin monsters into Fantasy Grounds, you know, reconstruct the hand-drawn map in Fantasy, all that stuff. Did it all over the weekend. Of course, then I had to reintroduce Fantasy Grounds to players, some of whom hadn't used it at all, and some of them whom have only used it once or twice, some of whom have some limited experience with previous digits. So there was that. So we had to do the Fantasy Grounds introduction before we started playing. And then we had to finish this fight that was on the verge of a TPK in a new platform that people hadn't used. And that was just one, two, three disastrous decisions. And so when the TPK happened, for the first time in a long time, there was a little voice in the back of my head that said, fuck that, do over. And I literally sort of blurted out to the party, like, not in so many words, but what if we just have a do-over? Let's just do this again. Okay. And we talked a lot back and forth about what we wanted to do and whether we wanted to let it stand and what have you. And because it didn't feel great. And it didn't feel great for reasons that had very little to do with the fight. Until the players sort of talked me down off the cliff and said, look, the situation was heading toward a TPK before we even went, you know, before we did the transition and everything. And, you know, interrupting the fight in the middle was not actually a big disaster. And really, we knew what we were getting into. We see what we could have done differently. We earned that outcome. The dice could have been nicer. Other things could have happened. But in the end, that's the ending we earned. So, you know, we don't need to roll back the clock. We don't need to do anything crazy. It's just, it is what it is. And they reassured me that it was okay that it worked out that way. That said, I put an ass ton of work into bringing my campaign into Fantasy Grounds just to have it die in an hour. So there's also that. We're now talking about the new campaign we're going to start because, you know, after some discussion, we've decided not to continue this particular storyline or continue in this particular corner of the Angryverse. But we are going to continue because this is the group that has been helping me sort of work out what an open world game should be like. And honestly, it's a lot of the stuff that this group has shown me and helped me learn that is feeding into the town stuff that you'll read about next week. And so we are going to iterate on it. We're going to do an open world game again, but with lessons learned and, you know, and a fresh start. So it's all good. But I still feel really crappy about this one. This is an ending that made me very, very sad. And, of course, a big part of it is that this group is one of the best groups that I have run for in a really long time. The players are just phenomenal to play with. They are phenomenal to run for. I just really enjoy the game and I enjoy them. So, you know, that said, I'm still a GM and I shouldn't be letting emotions cloud my judgment. I shouldn't say things like, yeah, you guys, you can have a retcon. Let's just, you know, just JK, reload the save. Quick save, quick load, quick load. You know, you wake up at the last bonfire, which unfortunately they were killed at the bonfire by the Sahuagin, so that wouldn't have been so great. But, you know, So I let my emotions get the best of me. That said, I made mistakes, and you know, now I'm owning them. The other campaign I do not want to talk about yet, that is the one with Tiny and the in-laws. And we, okay, I will talk about this just briefly. One of the people playing in that game is very new to role-playing games and has run into a couple of standard things that new players run into when they start playing role-playing games for the first time. One is finding the balance between playing their character and trying to complete the adventure goals. Okay? Because there comes a time you cannot sabotage the cooperative group quest to play your character. You can't. That goes against the game. I know some groups tolerate that shit. It's not right. Okay? If you're a group that tolerates that shit, good for you. It ain't right. It's a cooperative gameplay experience, and everybody is counting on everyone at the table to have at least similar goals in mind. So if your character, if you're portraying your character in a way that adds, that sabotages the player's ability to succeed at the adventure, you need to tone it down or change how you're playing the character, or you wrote a bad character. So the player was having trouble grasping that, and their portrayal of their character ultimately caused a lot of trouble, which alone could have been dealt with, but for the other problem they had is, and this is, again, a very standard problem that a lot of new people in role-playing games run into, and that is emotionally separating yourself from your character such that if something goes bad in the game, you don't get personally angry at the other players at the table for it. Okay? So we ran into two issues there, both of which as a GM you deal with sometimes. And you deal with them like you deal with any GMing issue. You pull the player aside and say, hey, let's talk. And if the player is receptive and, you know, I understand, you know, yeah, I realize, yes, you know, we are playing a team game and I thought, you know, I'm playing my character, but the first goal is always to cooperate with the group. Right, okay, I get that now. If the player is not receptive, then they leave the table. It's as simple as that. You know, and I had that, you know, some of the players in my Fall of Silver Pine Watch games will remember we had that issue at one table where a player's portrayal of a character after repeated warnings was still intentionally sabotaging the way the game, you know, was putting making the game harder for the other players to win. And that I don't think that's fair. So I had to step in, and ultimately the player was not receptive to being corrected, and it did not end well. The problem here is when you are dealing with family members, especially family or like especially things like in-laws, all of the interpersonal relationships make doing the GMing thing very difficult sometimes, of pulling people aside and saying, you know, you're being an ass, cut it out. You know, that kind of, like, you don't start there as a GM. You obviously don't start with, hey, you're being an ass, cut it out. But you do have to deal with these things from a position of strength and from a no-nonsense position of, at the table, I'm the boss, and I'm telling you what you're doing is wrong. I'm willing to listen to your explanation. I'm willing to find a compromise. I'm willing to hear it out your way, hear your perspective, and I will listen, and we will find a common ground if possible. But I'm still the GM. This is still my table. And at the end of the day, I'm going to manage the table for the good of the game. So that game is on hold for a little while until we can figure out how this stuff can be addressed. Okay. And obviously it's an uncomfortable situation, but my in-laws and Tiny do not listen to these podcasts, so they will not hear of themselves in this. Okay. Message hard time extended. Thank you, Proselus. Kaladrev, could you please discuss Smafarge Alpha? Sure. Okay, so the concept behind Smafarge Alpha is simple. Basically, when you have an idea for a game, what you want to do is you want to put together the simplest, most slapdash version of that game and get it in front of people to see if the game has any potential at all, or to see if it's just a complete train wreck and there's no point going any further with it. That's called an alpha test. So when I say Smafarge Alpha, I'm referring to putting together a slapdash version of a role-playing game that I've been building in the background, tentatively titled The Single Most Awesome Fantasy Adventure Role-Playing Game Ever, with an exclamation point, putting it in front of people, and then seeing if it's a complete train wreck. That's what the Smafarge Alpha is. Okay. Stu says, you've shaken up your workflow quite a bit. How has keeping to the new schedule been? Asks Stu. It has been tricky. Especially with all of the other things happening at Angry Games HQ. But every day gets a little easier. You know, you just got to keep sticking at the routine until it becomes a routine and a habit. So it's manageable. I'm not doing anything I can't manage. And in the end, it'll be easier. Right now, I'm still getting used to it. And while you're getting used to something, it takes a little while for it to stick, you know. October Foundry. Thank you for your explanations. I'm excited to help support your project with republished Game Angry 1 piggybacking on Game Angry 2! ! Yay! Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. You know, honestly, one of the most rewarding things about this community is how excited everybody is to hear about everything I do. I don't know what else to say other than it's tremendously gratifying to have people who are excited. Like, I make jokes when people ask me about Smafarge and I don't want to give information. And I obviously make a joke out of it like I just did with Kaladrev. But nonetheless, even though I can't reveal anything or I'm careful about what I reveal when, I'm still really, really gratified to see people excited for every next thing I write. It's really rewarding. And when things do get hard, when the content schedule gets overwhelming, when the internet is the internet and starts to break my fragile spirit, it is the thing that keeps me going. All right, Angry GM here again, and that's where it ends. That's where the blue screen of death occurred, and actually that's kind of a good spot to stop anyway. So I just want to make sure that I do get in my customary thank you to absolutely everyone who supports me, who reads my work, who listens to these monthly live chats, who participates in them, who sends me feedback and comments. What I was saying there at the end, absolutely true. It's the excitement and the engagement of the community. It's the comments. It's the feedback. It's the Discord. It's the friends I've made on the way. They were the real enemy all along. Wait, no. It's the friends I've made along the way. That was the real journey. So thank you to everyone, and I will see you all next month. And oh, and please, in the comments below, let me know if you have any thoughts regarding the publication of a sequel to Game Angry and also a revised, updated, and republished Game Angry to come along with it as sort of a bonus item. Thanks.